With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's up?
What?
I am really good, thanks, Stuart. Good.
This is a new dynamic. We're in your front room.
Yes, we
this
are.
This is actually the first time I've ever been in your front room.
It is, mate. It is, yeah.
It's
welcome.
Nice. It's
welcome.
Nice.
It needs decorating. That's why I'm back in Essex.
Yeah.
Give it a little decorating.
Okay.
But I've even asked you, I was going to have a decorating party, and you said you're busy.
Yep.
I didn't even give you any dates.
Tied up, mate. Got a lot on. Quite the big deal these days.
you are a big deal.
Christopher, have you seen how many downloads we've had on our podcast?
Lots now.
It's officially, I'd say it's more than lots. I'd say it's proper lots.
It's gone into, yeah.
We are going to make an announcement probably in the next week or so when we hit a landmark number.
Yeah.
And then we'll do some funny shit with that, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I feel like it's been a while. So I've been on holiday, and I'm sure I'll discuss this on either one of our podcasts or maybe even the Drunk Cast, the horrendous nightmare I had, which will be, I did actually text Pip in the middle of the nightmare, and he said that had completely made his day. So he seemed quite happy at my misfortune.
Oh.
But we know how we three roll.
He's a sadist, you know, isn't he?
He is. Evil hairy man.
I think that from the sounds of it, I think that is an episode of a Drunk Cast or a Hardcore Listing, all of its sacred own moment. Because it's insane.
Oh, it's a funny time. It's a day after. We've just found out the results of the general election today, haven't we?
Yep.
But we sort of said that. You know, in regards to things that have happened recently with horrific tragedies and things like that, we took a stance and said that we don't feel like we should comment on stuff like that, really. And we thought if anything can be in the light of these horrible things that have happened, the best thing we thought we could do was try and make people laugh.
Yeah.
And just...
At us?
yeah. So, we're not going to be discussing stuff like that. You know, I also think we don't need to be bringing any more attention to these people either.
Yeah.
So,
Do you mean the Tories?
Okay. Well, look. Today's guest
is actually a professional person at doing.
He's
what
funny.
We do.
He's funny.
He's professionally funny.
Yeah.
He's clinically hysterical.
He's clinically handsome.
No, he's clinically handsome.
When he arrived at ours, he was. I mean, we've met him before, haven't we? On the Christmas special Drunk Cast, and
yes, mate. Also I've been told. It was a bit hazy, but yeah.
He's bloody lovely, isn't he?
Brett Goldstein. He's as beautiful inside as he is out.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about
Picking
up his pooper. That'd be weird.
So Brett was lovely, and rather than us go to London and go into a studio and do it all professional, seeing as he's a big deal.
Yeah.
We didn't have to do that, did we?
No.
He got on the train and he'd come out to Essex and come to the Whiff Inn.
That's right.
And not only did he just come to the Whiff Inn, he bought a big box of sweets for my children.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to just go, can I have a go on the trampoline in the garden? And was just... My kids love Super Bob, the film he's in.
Yeah.
And it blew their mind that they were on a trampoline with Super Bob, which was really sweet. And he was really kind, and
he's bloody really good on that trampoline.
He
as
was
well.
Very good. He was very good.
Yeah, young at heart. I like that.
Absolutely. So yeah, if you need a rough idea of who Brett is, if you're not aware of his works, I'm sure you've heard him and seen him do Corner Boys with Scroobius Pip, which is ace. He wrote and did he produce Super Bob as well? Or direct it?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
He wrote it. Did he direct it? Oh, no, he worked. I think he worked in conjunction.
Okay. Well, there's a cracking British superhero film called Super Bob, and Brett plays Super Bob. Also stars Catherine Tate, amongst others, and it's ace. And
it's proper funny.
Well, so Brett is a good friend of Ricky Gervais and tours quite... a lot when Ricky goes out, he does lots of warm-ups for him and stuff, mm-hmm. if I remember rightly. And
he's in Derek.
And he's,
did you mention
that? He's in Derek.
Yeah, he's great in Derek.
The great Derek.
Off the record as well.
Yeah,
So,
have we said enough nice stuff about Brett?
We haven't dug him out at all.
He's hard to dig out, isn't he? He's very... He's just quite pleasant.
I'll think of something for parts like how to close the episode one. I'll dig him out there. I'll think of something nasty to say.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I'd like to disassociate myself from that because I think he's just really nice. Well, look, we'll shut up now because this has been a huge. I'll tell you what, before we say anything else, we get on with it even. What I will suggest is that you go and get your tickets for our live show, the Hardcore Listing Live.
Ctickets.com.
Ctickets. Just search Hardcore Listing and it will pop up. It's at the Hoxton Bar and Grill.
Yep.
And we've got a few people that have already said they're going to come up and get involved. Tony from MasterChef is going to come along.
Oh, wicked.
Riker,
yeah.
Yeah.
Doing a special giveaway.
And we've
crazy.
We're going to have lots of merch as well. You can get your Hardcore Listing t-shirts and there'll be lots of Redshift goodies available. And off the record, I'm sure there's going to be quite a few other famous faces there that you will probably recognise and know.
And if you're lucky, she'll sign your tits.
And I'll sign boobies. Enjoy the podcast.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
We are running.
Are we? Recording?
Yeah. Yes, we are. Yes, okay. We are. Hello, mate. How are you doing?
I'm smashing.
Oh, that's good.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you very much, mate. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Hardcore Listing. I'm with Dr. Feelgood and Mr. Potato Head.
Chris and Stuart. Thank you very much. It's episode... I don't know when we release it.
We've released, episode 9 today, I believe.
Yeah, and thank you once again for all downloading it and supporting it and stuff, which has been really lovely of you. and we're really lucky today because we've got our friend from the Drunk Cast that isn't Scroob. a guest in today.
It reduces it down to two other people.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. So
it's the one who remembers it.
So, hello, Brett Goldstein.
Hello, how are you?
We're good. Night, we're good. You've got a little sweat on. Why's that?
It's going to sound dodgy. I've been trampolining with your little girls.
New dangerous loner joins the club.
I mean, there were witnesses. It wasn't like a secret.
No, it was harmless fun, wasn't it?
It was.
You was on there as well.
I was on there.
Yeah,
brilliant.
It wasn't just me. It wasn't unsupervised.
Full gang.
Craig got stuck in. Took his shirt off. Sorry. That was a lot of fun. And I'd say that, Bray, you're quite the trampolinist.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You did good.
Got air, I think, the radical.
He got mad air. My sort of chinos started falling down. So,
That's true. He did flash.
Mm. Yeah. So we've decided... You've ummed and ahed, haven't you, and had a bit of a meltdown about your list.
I sent you about 25 different lists.
Yeah.
Because I got very excited. And I thought, you only get to go on this show once.
You get one shot, pal.
One shot on a list. Make it count.
So, some of the ones that you come across with, we was well up for. We was chatting mm-hmm. to it, going like, well, what do you reckon? And
yeah.
And so, we kind of think, well, we spoke, didn't we, all three of us, just before we started recording, that we're going to try and sort of head through a few time-dependent, aren't
yes.
we? So we're going to try and cap it at the 2 hours, so we've yep. got 2 one-hour episodes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what did you want to start with?
Top 5 worst, weirdest gigs I've ever done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's a good starter. Yeah. It's a very good starter. Yeah.
So,
okay.
So this is...
This is stand-up.
Yep.
So I've done stand-up now for 9 years.
Okay.
I've done many gigs, and many of them have been horrendous. and to narrow them down to the 5 worst... I mean, because you do stand-up, you know a bit about it. You know a lot about it. You go all over the country and you are invited, and various places are very well-run gigs and various places are not, and things happen. And I thought, oh, well, I was trying to think of like different, they're not all just like, oh, that was a bad gig.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you're in just situations where you worry for your life. And
bloody
other times,
hell.
Other times it's just, oh, these people fucking hate me. And they just hate my face. I've just stepped on. And I thought, oh, maybe there's some good stories in that.
Okay.
Oh, mate, yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
I think it'd be really good. Just knowing what comedians have to go through to stand up there, and you sit there making time to structure something that you hope is going to make people laugh, and
yeah,
and that can be dependent on, I guess, the crowd, and if the crowd are feeling it, or if they pick up a bit of a bad vibe, then people might all go within themselves a little bit and might not want to laugh. And oh, I don't know, you've got to be tough to be a comedian, I think.
The worst is like when people say they died. I think when you die. It's when it's silent. Like, it's not... I think the worst feeling you can get as a comic on stage is pity. Is when when they're so quiet that they... Like, as if someone shouts out, you're shit, then at least on some level, yeah. they think you're strong
they're
enough.
They're engaging.
They think you're strong yeah. enough that they can say that. But
and
if
they won't
even,
break you.
Yeah, but if even a like dickhead at the back... feels so sorry for you that he thinks I can't say your shit, that's when you're dying. That's a real death.
Has that happened then?
Yeah.
Yep. But it happens, like when that happens, it's usually like just, I mean, it happens to everyone, but and you can never, like, it happened. The last time it happened to me was like in Leicester at a Christmas gig, and it was just like I literally stepped on stage and they went quiet, as if they sort of collectively went, I don't like his face.
Yeah, they judged
like
you.
And there appearance. Was nothing I could do. And I tried so many different things to try and get him on board. Nothing happened. And then at 15 minutes, I got a light at the back, which I thought meant 20. I was supposed to do 20. But the guy who booked the gig was obviously going, get off now. And I said into the mic, well, it's nearly time for me to finish. You'll be pleased to hear. And a guy at the back, not for me to hear it, just quietly said to his table, thank God.
Fucking hell.
And then when I got off stage, I thought, well, maybe it wasn't that bad. But the promoter was waiting for me with my coat and bag. And he took me, he said, come this way. And he took me round like a back alley, opened the door and he went, the station's that way. I think it's best the audience don't see you.
What?
Just fucking chucked me back on the train back to London.
That's really horrible.
Did you still get paid?
Yeah, I got paid, yeah.
Fucking hell, man.
I wasn't sure whether to invoice it, but yeah, I thought, well, I'll come to Leicester, did I? I mean, I did.
Well, it's not your
I did
fault,
my job.
That, you know, it's
just incredibly badly.
That's a bit, no, but then also it is a bit like, you know, as music promoters, you have to know your booking, right? And like,
we've had bad DJs and bad bands, but I don't think I've ever just gone like, there's a door, leave.
Oh, yeah, you suck.
Well, I think he thought he was like protecting me. I think he thought,
oh, did it feel like there was a bit of...
I didn't think anything was, I just think they were not my people. But I think he thought best that they don't see you, because otherwise there's going to be awkward conversations or something.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Mate.
Anyway, that's the that's like the worst kind, where there's like nothing you can do. But the... Well, I was going to tell you, that isn't even in the top 5. I'm now thinking this is a really dark...
This is brilliant. No, this is amazing.
I mean, But what happened? So when I started stand up,
are these going to be in order?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe.
Well, I don't know. Like from worse to really worse, or
no? Because some aren't like worse. Some are just like weird.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But like, so when the first gig I did went amazing. I'm never going to do top five most amazing gigs. By the way, just for the record, if you've never seen me, occasionally I have a good gig. I don't want this. This is like a really bad promotion for Brett Goldstein's stand-up. I mean, he sounds terrible. Just gig after gig was awful. Bear in mind, I've done like over 1,000 gigs. So we're talking about
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking only 990 have been terrible.
Yeah. Only 60% higher.
But the first gig I did, very first gig I did, was like amazing, totally amazing. And it was purely, I think, adrenaline and terror. Yeah. I was so nervous about it. And it just sort of went amazing. I literally stormed
Your first ever gig.
First ever gig. And if the first gig had been bad, I don't think I'd have ever carried
on. Where was it?
It was at the Enterprise in Chalk Farm. Okay. And I was like shitting myself. And it was just fucking bang, 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 and it was amazing. And so then at that gig, someone said to me, and I knew nothing, I didn't really know how it worked, the gigging stuff, and he said to me, "Is that your first five? Unbelievable, that was so good." He said, "You should get to the Comedy Store and go on at the Gong Show," which I knew nothing about. And he said, "All you have to do is 5 minutes, and then you get a slot at the Comedy Store." And I was like, "Great, all right, that
Easy.
Sounds good." Yeah, sounds it. Yeah, I thought, all right, second gig, Comedy Store, sold. Yep. And Comedy Store, as you know, biggest sort of most famous venue in London. So I go to this sign up. You just sign up. Anyone can sign up to this Gong Show. I've never seen it. Don't know what it is. And I'm put on. I'm going to be like number 40 of 60 acts or something. And I'm in the second half. So I think, oh, just watch the first half. It's absolutely rammed, full to the brim of people. Mm. And they go, "Welcome to the Gong Show. You know, 5 minutes. All you have to do is 5 minutes, or you get gonged off. People are given three red cards. If three red cards come up, you're off." First person goes up, they go, "Oh, hello, I'm a bit," they say, "I'm a bit," the entire audience go, "Fuck off!" And I'm sat there like, "Oh my God, what is this?" What happened?
Thrown to the lions.
Yeah. I was like, holy shit, I didn't know this was the thing. And then I watch as act after act just gets like, down from the audience, "You prick!" And it's just like, oh, and I realised that people come to this thing almost like a football game or something. They just come to get their hate out. Like, anyone's listening to this. Yeah. But occasionally, like, someone who is clearly a much more established comic
would
go on.
You've got to slay them then to not get
Well,
that.
In a way, what you've got to do is either, arguably, to win that thing, you have to be, like, just really weird and different. Mm. So they go, "Oh, what's he doing?" Mm. But, you know, some people got through, but it's you better be doing, like, a one-liner, because no one's listening longer than that. Anyway, so I'm watching like panic, and I'm pacing around the back of the room like, why am I here? What have I done? Why on earth? Like, I don't have the skills. I now realize what a fool I've been. Like, this is my second gig. I do not have the skills to stand in front of 400 baying people.
Is that how many people?
Yeah, and do 5 minutes. And I'm thinking, well, don't do it. But if I set myself a thing, I'll always do it. So I was like, but it's like, literally felt like a kamikaze mission. It's like, well, I'm going to my death here, but I'm going because I've signed it and I said I'd do it. And I wait, and it's now later and later, so people are more and more pissed. And as it gets to me, whoever's been on before gets gonged off after like a second. I think they sort of haven't even touched the mic, and three red cards go up and gong. And he goes, so whoever's the MC goes, "Next up, it's number 42, whatever. It's Brett Goldstein." And you have to walk down the like aisle through the crowd.
Oh.
And, but they can't even see me yet. And what I'm hearing, the chant is, "Fuck off, fuck off."
But you're walking through
there. Haven't even seen me. And I'm walking through to "fuck off, fuck off." And I, just in my head, I just remember thinking, it's like I'm going to war. What am I doing? I'm literally going over the, I mean, no disrespect to soldiers. I'm sure what you do is equally brave.
Yeah. No.
I thought, it's like I'm stepping over the fucking thing into this. And I remember standing on a stage and it literally was like a hurricane. It felt like you could feel this madness, this like energy of hate. Fuck off.
Sounds like a public execution.
Yeah. And I said my first, I just sort of held it. I remember like gripping the mic and sort of standing there feeling like this wind in my face. And I held it and I said my first line, and like the front section laughed. So the back is still going, "Fuck off." And then the front section like proper laugh. And then I think, okay. And I just sort of put my head down and I say the next thing. And then that gets a laugh. And so it sort of starts kind of spreading. But then what happens is after about 45 seconds, this crowd, this half of the crowd goes, oi, because people are still chanting, oi, shut up, I think he's good. But then the other half of the crowd that have just been told to shut up go, you shut up, you fuck off. So now I'm just stood there while there's like two armies fighting each other. And I'm just looking down the middle, and they go, fuck off, I think he's good, fuck off. But I now realise that the people who like me are no longer listening.
Are you doing your act? Yeah,
I'm still talking.
You're still talking, yeah.
I'm just on like autopilot. The words are coming out of my mouth. But now half the audience are fighting the other half the audience. So I realise that the people who were on my side are no longer listening to me because they're fighting the other people.
I forgot what they're fighting for.
Yeah, and I'm just standing there like, well, and I sort of, and there's one guy, so now basically no one's even looking at me, and it's just like, fuck off, mate, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off. And I'm just saying my words. And then there's a guy in the front who's got the red card, and he looks at me, and I look at him like, put me out of my misery, mate. But he looks at me and he goes, and I hear him above this, it's like a really like moment of like an angelic thing, and he goes, go on, mate, I like it. And I look at him and I go, no, you're all right. And he just puts up the thing and he goes, gong. And I go, thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
So I did like, 1 minute 47. But believe me, that felt like a year.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. That was my second gig. I mean, it's been easier since then.
That's a baptism of fire, isn't it?
Yeah. I do actually think it's quite a good thing to make stand-ups do because you feel like,
It's
uphill from there.
Yeah.
Downhill. What? Uphill. I know.
So since then, you've been back a lot, I presume, and watched it and...
No, I've never been back to the gong show. I mean, I don't... I think it's...
Would you get involved? Would you get involved with, like, the chanting and, like...
Oh, right. What, to watch it?
I think... I wonder, because maybe you become, like... Well, I went through it. Maybe you become, like, completely unsympathetic to people. And you'll just go, fuck off, you prick! Before anyone's done anything.
Weird. Like, have you ever, like, heckled a comedian or a band?
Surprisingly, not really. I get a bit shy about stuff like that, to be honest with you. Yeah, I do. Just, I'm not one for it, really.
I think it's really... I don't know. Me and anyone I know always just think, why would you fucking heckle a comedian? Like, they're funny. Mm. That's what they do. So they will shut you down.
Yeah.
I remember Jimmy Carr always comes to Grace.
He does
testy stuff.
Yeah, don't heckle him.
On the drunk car. Do not heckle him.
Yeah,
because in Grays as well, you're just getting people like, hey, Jimmy, you fucking nonce. Yeah, and and he was just ruthless. Yeah, and just. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. But he almost invites it as well.
There's a lot
when he finishes his act.
Yeah.
Like,
no, he does, then. He says, well, who's up for... Well, sometimes he does that.
Yeah.
There's some good heckles on YouTube to watch, people who handle it pretty well. But, yeah, I couldn't do that. I'm quite a bit too self-conscious, I think, to shout out of that. Saying that, and I'm on the drunk cast talking about getting my wang out in nightclubs.
Yeah,
but,
you do seem shy.
It's strange. It's a strange...
Not that I'm encouraging people to go to your shows and heckle, but how do you deal with heckling?
Well, the reality is, and please don't come to my shows and heckle, I don't think I'm the sort of act who, like, invites it. But also, the reality is, other than the gong show, where that is sort of the game.
Yeah.
A lot of people always say, oh, I'd be scared of being heckled. But I don't think, like, being heckled as in terms of someone going, you're shit, touch wood, no one has ever said you're shit to me. And I've never seen anyone be told you're shit. And I've seen hundreds and hundreds of gigs. It's actually really rare and quite weird. Most people, when they heckle, when people think of heckling, what it is someone joining in.
Yeah.
And they think they're helping, or it's often they're enjoying it and they think they're adding to it or something.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people do will shut that down and go, shut up, mate, you prick,
and say
something witty. But I always try and yes and it and try and turn it into something.
Yeah.
Unless it's mean. If it's sort of mean spirited and it's not going to help, I'll shut it down. But if it's someone who's sort of stupid, sometimes you have like mad people say weird shit, but instead of going, I'll go, what's that? And then I'll try and incorporate it because I want it to be live. I want it
to be
this happened tonight and this couldn't happen any other night. And the reason it happened tonight is because that person said a really weird thing.
Yeah.
So let's not ignore that happened. Let's make it fun. And then you keep it nice and everyone's having a good time instead of going, fuck off, what'd you say?
Yeah.
Prick!
Well, we don't want nice, do we? We want to hear all about your fucking weird shit gigs.
Yeah. Before we go into that, when you used to go, did you ever used to have just like dead silence when you were in a...
Yeah, when you were a comedy
Nilo
band.
Nilo, Serious Problem? Or?
No, because there was nine of us, it was easy just to...
block.
Like kind of
shut people down quite easily.
Yeah,
and because the nature of the band was a little bit kind of not aggressive.
Yeah.
But
it's bloody 9 of you up on stage as well. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that was good.
Yeah.
People
so
were scared.
I don't think that many people were too fussed about being. Yeah, I think I just thought if I shout something, I would probably have 9 people dressed idiotically being.
Mm.
It would just shut me down straight away. No, I do remember there was a guy at one gig, and because we was quite leery on stage, I remember this. We walked off stage, and my mate's mum said to me, there's a guy over there, and he left and he come back with a potato. With nails, like 6-inch nails, pushed through it to front me. So he was a bit aggressive.
Hang on, what happened?
That sounds like the AT got locked in a greengrocer's.
Fast forward about 2 years, and he was actually.
I'm eating a roast dinner.
he was actually on stage with us. His knob was pierced, and he had a chain attached to the. Ring on his bell end, attached to my friend who would pull him along while he was on a skateboard being pulled along on the chain. So yeah, he was. I think he was just a bit of a massive show off that didn't like the fact that we was show offs.
Why do people put sharp things through their helmet?
I don't know.
I can't.
I also heard that if you do put a sharp thing through your helmet, not that I was looking into it, someone told me,
go on.
You're then not allowed to like have sex for a month or something. So really? Like, if you do it. I mean, what's the? There's just no thinking behind it.
No
positive.
I remember when, in the sort of like mid-90s, when the Prodigy blew right up and Keith was all a bit crazy with his zany hair and stuff. I remember that there was a guy that used to come to one of my clubs that was obsessed with him and shaved his head and had the little kind of devil horny bits that he had done and had his nose pierced, but he had his knob pierced as well. And I remember having a wee in a kind of urinal type thing in the venue and him coming and having a wee next to me and he literally peed 2 streams and I remember thinking fuck, and he was and I was like, not that I was looking at his Corey,
sounds
but I was
like
just
yours.
Like no, but obviously when you see 2 jets of piss it was a bit weird.
Does he so he come two ways as well?
Yeah, you and one of your other friends both got it in the face.
Do you know what that's would it
I
well, it's coming out the same,
mate.
Hole. Same area, isn't it?
Yeah.
Holes. Yeah, I don't know.
I had a friend who had 2 holes in his dick. He should be in a museum. 2 holes. One for wee, one for cum. Had 2 holes.
No, you did.
Yeah, they were separate. They were separate.
Get out of it.
Yeah, true story. And yes, I saw it. Because I was like, well, I'm going to have to say
well,
it.
You made him come. I mean, not with your hand.
I said, go on, do it. I'm going to stay here until
I'm
you
nervous.
Prove it.
I'm nervous.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was like an anomaly. His tubes were separate. 2 holes, one for wee.
I tell you what, he's bloody lucky that was all it was. Do you know what I mean? Because when anomalies go wrong, it's normally not just the convenience of a separation. Normally, it's like a micro penis or like, you know, it's all looks like a right mess down there.
All guesswork.
From experience. Oh my God. Because,
But how's he...
Circumcision, when that goes wrong, I was watching a thing on that.
You were watching a Channel 5 documentary when circumcision goes wrong.
Basically.
When neighbours' circumcisions go wrong.
Basically. I was looking at different issues and so, you know, FGM is one of the most terrible
looking
things
for
ever,
a friend,
right?
Yeah.
And yet we also do circumcision and that doesn't get talked about a lot. And actually, it's only something I've started to look into. It's like, oh, actually, that's kind of quite dark that we do just whip that off. But no, I don't know. But yeah, it can go wrong. And lads are, you know, sex life, stopped from the start. You know,
have you ever let anyone look at your Google history?
Yes, yeah. But
no,
you
haven't.
I've recently deleted it all.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's nothing.
The person that looks
there.
At your Google history will be the same person that will be putting that hard drive in a plastic bag and having it removed from your ass.
Let me answer that honestly. Haven't let someone intentionally look at my Google history, but no doubt that, you know, people have had a little peek at it, like girlfriends. Like, what's he been up to? Why did he close that laptop really quickly?
Yeah.
So, yeah, have you then, Brett? Have you had the courage to go? Yeah. Do you want to? Yeah, or has one of your mates just gone, can I, for a laugh, see what you've been looking at?
Well, I don't watch porn anymore, so I'm all right.
Yeah,
it's part of your act, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I used to, and actually, genuinely, that was one of the upsides. One of the best things about giving up porn is not fearing people that looking through
so
your
funny.
Computer.
Like, me and Pip.
I'm like, yeah, you can look at my computer. Like, and it's the first. I was like, oh god, I feel so relieved.
Yeah, yeah. It is kind of true. It is kind of true. It's when you're single. Because yeah. when you're locked down, it's like you're a bit more on top of that sort
no,
of stuff.
No, it's not. Even when you're like you're married and stuff, you do sometimes just have that thing where you. It ain't so much like, oh, did I lock the door? It's, oh, did I delete my history?
No, that's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it. You're more attuned to it.
Yeah.
But Pip, like, we were at the Bellasaur the other day, and I can't remember why, but I went to Google. I've had some quite kind of awful things happen with this whole subject when I've opened laptops. When I used to get on the train, I've opened a laptop and it's been on hold. But I reckon that's happened a lot.
Yeah,
I reckon that's happened a lot. But I was searching on Google and I was searching for I can't even remember what it was, amateur something. And it came up amateur
allure. Circumcision.
And it came up, yeah. DIY. I was saying I could do it, and it came up a porn reference, and Pip was like, "I said you're search history," and I was like, "I don't think I've done that, but you know, who knows?"
Do you want a beer?
I'll have a beer now, mate. Yeah,
no, yeah, indeed. For me, thank you.
What do you want? Spirits?
You got vodka?
Yeah, mate.
Oh,
well, maybe have a little one.
Yeah,
cheeky little one.
Vodka and
whatever you have.
I've got some Coke, some Diet Coke.
Diet Coke.
Yeah,
lovely.
Vodka is in the. I'll go and grab it.
Oh, no, don't worry.
Bacardi, gin.
We'll do it in the second one.
All right, okay, we'll do that, we'll do that.
Well, right, shall we make a start?
Yeah, let's do it.
After we've deviated straight onto circumcision, and thank you, mate. Okay, so top five weirdest gigs. I mean...
Oh, that was one of them. I've already done one.
Okay, sure. No. Number four, what's number four?
Well, I thought, you know, different... sort of areas. This isn't necessarily the weirdest thing, it's a shorter one, but I don't let my mum and dad see me do stand-up. They've never seen me do stand-up, my parents, because I mean, I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah.
And they're you know, they're very loving, supportive people, and they want to come.
Yeah,
but I have forbidden them, and to be fair, they have stuck to that.
Yeah,
but you know what is awful is I can't stop their friends coming.
Yeah.
And I have done gigs where I talk about my mum and dad, and friends of my mum and dad have been in the audience, and that's a fucking nightmare. But also because I talk about very rude stuff, and also I do think that there's an element of, I mean, I sort of talk about this in stand-up, but there's an element of it's kind of intimate, like there's something weirdly, it is a bit like wanking in front of strangers, you know what I mean? There's something, and so I couldn't masturbate with my mum and dad watching it, basically.
Weird.
And I'd made this, and I'd said, you know, you can never come. And once I had a gig, I'd been going about 2 years, and I was pacing around outside the gig. This is when I still smoked, and I was very nervous, and I was just smoking a cigarette. And a woman came down the stairs to go into the gig, and I locked eyes with her, and it was my mum in a wig.
Fuck off.
True story. My mum had put on a wig to try and sneak into the gig, and we locked eyes, and I went, what the fuck? And she turned straight around and went straight back up the stairs. And then I called her, and I could hear her like rushing away. And I was like, did you genuinely just try and sneak into the gig in a wig? And she was like, I thought you wouldn't recognise me. And I was like, you're my mum. I mean, I know your face more than Mickey Mouse. You know what I mean? Like, of course it's not like I'm playing the O2.
That's such a cool mum, though, isn't it?
I'm at the Ginglick in Shepherd's Bush.
That's brilliant, though.
Well, thank God I spotted her.
I could, like, my mum and dad were never allowed to my gigs.
Oh, really?
And
thank God you said that.
They were super supportive and was like, yep, like, really want to come, but I couldn't do it. I would be mortified misbehaving how I did if my parents were there.
It suddenly changes. The thing I think they understand, but it's hard. I do get that they feel sort of left out, but it would, because it's live, it changes. Like, they can come and see Superbob and stuff at a screening because it's done. But because it's live, them in the room changes it. It's like, what's that fucking physics thing? That looking at it changes it.
Yeah.
You know.
The observation of it, yeah.
You know, that physics thing.
Yeah. The physics thing. So I've been reading about that along with the, what was it, the Israel nuclear.
The Iran.
I was wondering if you could ask me about that. Say, how is the situation? You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. So, yeah, it would check. So they can't come. But anyway, she tried to get in a wig, and thank God I spotted her. Because imagine that moment happening on stage, halfway through a routine about wanking. Is that my mum in a wig? It's all my dreams come true.
Was it a good job of a wig, or was it a bit?
It was
obvious?
Like she's got long hair, and it was a short. It was like a bob, you know,
right.
Like a sort of like
tartan hat with the
ginger. Gaucho,
yeah,
glasses, and
yeah, and a tash. I mean,
so did you want to be an actor or a stand-up or a bit of everything?
I always loved stand-up, but I was always too scared. I just thought it was something impossible. And I was always an actor, and I was always a writer from when I was little. But I'd fucking listen to stand-up all the time. I was like obsessed with it. But it was almost like a secret because I was so...
What was it? What were you listening to at that age?
Richard Pryor. I got like all the box sets of everything. I had Richard Pryor, Steve Martin, mostly American stuff. And I tell you what, one of the defining things, and I keep thinking I've told him this when I saw him, there was a free cassette that came with Loaded in the 90s, and it was like stand up. And like, there's a guy called fuck. I think he's I can't remember his name, and it's so terrible.
What do you look like?
His name is Matt. I can't remember his last name. Oh, this is really bad. Can we edit this?
No,
Matty.
He's not a big act, but I know that routine that was on that tape off by heart, and I think it's fucking brilliant. And it's so, genuinely like one of the things that inspired me or whatever. And I always think I must tell him how influential he has been, more than say Richard Pryor or something, because I heard that the most. This thing that came free with.
Is he still on the circuit then?
Yeah, I see him sometimes, but not much. And
oh god, the thought of standing up and trying to be funny would—I just don't think I could do it.
But you basically do that.
It's different. I've never been. I'm not a funny. For example, let's take the Drunk Cast for example. When I listen back to that on the train with my own Drunk Cast t-shirt on, with my own face on it. When I listen back to that, my humour is very much quite crass, quite slapstick, and I like to be awkward and cringy. I like that, but that's not. I don't. When you contribute, Brett, you're like one line very sharp and really fucking funny and thought through. I can't do any of that. So I'm more of a jester.
I believe in you.
Thanks, man. But I'm happy with that, you know. I'm not like, you know, I sleep.
Yes, please. Thank you.
That would kill me. Stand up. Performing DJing can be quite nerve-wracking because I said to a mate not that long ago that I'd had about 2 years of being so good as a DJ where I was going up every time I played. She's pissing his pants. Every time I played, I was nailing it. It was really good.
Yeah.
And it's just the truth, right? Yeah. I was smashing it. And, you know, I said that to a friend and I had 3 gigs. This was November last year after I confessed. Do you know what? I think I've got this DJing like nailed. Like, I can go in a room and I can get it right. And then I had 3 gigs, one after the other, where I just, fuck it, I just drowned. It was awful. Oh, the people aren't dancing, people are staring at me, people are asking me to change the music. That's like the same thing. Like when you're in that place, playing music you don't want to hear to a crowd that doesn't want to hear it. That is the worst situation to be in as a DJ. The best is obviously playing music that you want to hear and people are all loving it. But when you're in that quadrant, it's not a... It's a horrible place. But yet, I still didn't write any of those songs. And with something like comedy, that is
you could shout into the microphone. It's not my fault, these songs are shit.
Yeah. I don't know who wrote this one. But with comedy, you're like, I've made this and I think this is funny. I'm hoping you'll laugh. No one's laughing. That's
is why, particularly if you like I'm not doing a character really. I mean, it's a heightened version of myself, I suppose. But like, so when you have a bad gig, when people don't like your comedy, it's like... They're going, not only do I not like your comedy, I don't like you as a human being. You disgust me.
Especially as you walk up. The fact that you walked on stage, you know, you get that every now and then. You meet someone and you think they don't like the cut of my jib. And probably when you're younger, that probably bothers you. But as you get older, you're like, that's cool. I might like them. They might not like me. And I'm still okay with that.
Well, we mentioned it on when we done Pip's podcast together, the Drunk Cast, that I think if you see... You don't really know too much about you, and you've walked on stage to make us laugh. Mm. The bloke that's better looking than me that's going to try and be funny is instantly going to, I'm going to be against you.
That's interesting, that. Because
lots of comedians are kind of quirky looking. Mm. And
but you're a very handsome man.
And like, oh, thank you.
He's like a bad photocopy of Robin Williams, isn't you? Like, it's Robbie Williams.
No, he's not. He's barely got any hair on him.
But no, like, because when you first come in, you was talking about stand-up, you were saying, like, yeah, just, and then my face. And you mentioned your face about 3 or 4 times, and I just thought, you're a handsome man. Like, cheers. And,
cheers.
Photos of Brett all around. We should talk about that.
Cheers.
Yeah, and so I instantly think, oh, he's better looking than me. Like, so it's going to be annoying. Like, yeah. I think I'd be against you.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I'll be doing some previews in the next 2 weeks. I look forward to you coming.
No, but do you not think...
I'm against you. Thank you. That's a good heckle.
Just your face.
Only, for some reason, I think you're better looking than me, and I sort of don't like you from the start. Continue.
I really need to come back on that, because the heckler's heckled himself in a way.
Yeah, but it's like that kind of Gareth Gates thing. Like, you know, when he...
What did he do?
Well, he's got a little speech impediment, didn't he? And so everyone was like, oh...
You've got a lisp, haven't you?
We've got
Pip stuttering all the time. You've got a lisp, and I cannot be quiet.
Are you aware of my lisp?
Lisp. I am now.
Yeah. I'm 44, and it was what... I think about 3 years ago, I was just sitting up in my office, and my business partner just went to me like, well, that's all right. It's just because my other business partner was there, who's got a lisp. And she went, that's all right. You both got lisp, didn't you? And I was like, I haven't. He was like,
what?
Well, of course you have. And I was like, well, I haven't. And then I literally phoned up my wife, and I was like, have I got a lisp? And she was like, of course you have. And I'd never...
You didn't know?
In a million years.
Well, how long... So you was gone 40 and you didn't realise you had a lisp?
I reckon I was probably about 41, yeah. And I had no idea.
Had you started the podcast by that?
No, nothing.
Maybe you'd not heard your voice back.
Well, I'd sung in a band for years, and no one had ever just gone, oh, you lisping prick. Like, everyone was... Mm.
I think it's charming.
Thanks.
I don't. I think it's disgusting. It annoys me every time. I try and keep you away from anything with S's in, to be honest with you. I try and articulate conversations not with sausage in or...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah. Have we ever said that about Pip stutter? Like, when I knew him for about a month and he didn't stutter once.
Oh, really?
Back at college. And me being a twat, he said he went to say a word. And it was D, and he went duh 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 duh, and I went duh 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 duh, and he did it again a little bit later, and I tore into him again, and then he did it a little bit later, and I was like, oh mate, have you got a stutter? He went, yeah, and I was like, oh dude, I'm so I'm so sorry.
You know, the very first time I met Scroobius Pip, to my eternal shame, was at a gig about films. And I went on before him, and I didn't know him. And I did a whole routine about the King's Speech. like a whole routine about it. And he then went on and went, thanks for making me feel welcome.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So is the next one a weird one or a bad one?
Okay, let's do... I'll tell you what, I know what will be number one, because that's the... Okay, so the next one... Well, just tell you... Okay, so this is like a bad... The worst one. I'd say the worst gig I've ever had in terms of just like a bad, terrible gig. But quite funny, I think, hopefully. So I went... I got invited to Ibiza to do a gig, right? And it was me, Catherine Ryan, and Rich Wilson. And we'd been invited, and it was like... And it was like all paid for flights. It was 2 days, but the gig was only one night. And I thought, well, this is probably going to be a weird gig because it's Ibiza. I don't understand. Are we doing it to clubbers or like what's happening here? But it was like the other side of Ibiza, not the sort of club side.
The more calm, tranquil.
Yeah. And when we got there, we were picked up by the man at the airport, and he was very nice. He was like, oh, everyone's really excited that you're here. We're having this comedy night. And as we're driving there, he's sort of explaining what it is. And I'm starting to think, oh, this sounds... not what I thought it was. And basically, it's like, it's almost like we're doing a cruise ship, except we're not. It seems we're like a package hotel, like a hotel, probably all inclusive hotel. Mm. And it's families, and it's some sort of like jet ski aficionados week.
So you're like
or something.
A radical red coat.
Yeah, exactly. And we get there, and as I get there, I think, ah, oh, and then I get a really bad feeling when I see where we're performing, because I'm like, we're on a stage outside on the beach, and there's like dinner tables set up really far from the stage. There's obviously no roof, we're outside, and I'm thinking, if the acoustics are bad, we're fucked. Mm. And I'm already like, oh, this don't look good. And no one's around, the hotel's sort of empty, and I go, where is everyone? He goes, oh, they're on an all-day booze cruise. And I'm like, oh, great. Oh, so they're drinking all day before the gig. Okay, cool. Great. And so we...
How do you deal with that, though? Like, in your head, like, are you... Do you just...
Oh, in my head, I'm like, oh, we're fucked. I'm now preparing for...
Do you deal with that? Or do you... Or will that get the better of you? You think, oh, fucking hell, fucking
Do you know
hell.
What? What's weird is, I've discovered, I am actually, in a way, if I know a gig is going to be terrible... I almost get a bit zen about it because I go, all right, well, there's nothing I can do. Yeah. And then anything that happens is a bonus. I get more nervous when it's like an amazing gig and everyone goes, this is the best gig ever, and everyone storms it, because I think, well, I'll be the one. I could ruin this.
Yeah. Mm.
But if there's nothing to ruin, it's kind of... But I was nervous, and also because we're staying there. And so we'd met someone and they'd said like, oh, and tomorrow after the gig tonight, we'll take you out tonight. And then tomorrow we'll take you on the jet skis and, you know, you have a like, holiday. And it's like, okay, cool. So... We wait. People come off this booze cruise, and as they're walking past us, I'm like, "Oh no, this is not." They're battered, and the sort of chat they're having, the sort of comedy they seem to be into, is like, "Oh, tell him, because her tits fell out. Her tits fell out," and they're laughing. "Ah, yeah, my tits fell out, and he saw them. You saw them, didn't you? Yeah, he saw my tits." And I'm thinking, I don't know if you're gonna like. Stuff.
Shit.
And
that'd be a bit too nuanced.
And they eventually sit down for dinner, and we sort of have a table, like we have to sit with them. And there's a guy who's going to MC it, who's like he's like a cruise ship sort of music guy. So he goes on stage to introduce it, and he says, "I'm going to do a song."
Was you first?
No, Rich Wilson was first. So he goes, "I'll do a song," and he goes on stage. The CD doesn't work. He gets fucking angry. I'm also like, we can't hear him. I'm like, oh, this is fucked. So he's on stage. No one's giving him anything. He gets angry. He goes, oh, the fucking CD. And then he goes, right. Well, anyway, all right. Well, here's your comedy then. Well, here's your first act. So that was the intro for Rich Wilson. Rich Wilson is an amazing comedian. I love him very, very much.
Hell.
He goes on. He struggles. They're not listening to him. He's looking at me. He's going, mate, I knew this was going to be hard. And I was like, yeah. But he does his time, and he's very funny, but no one's listening, and he's just sort of not getting the thing. And then he goes, right, well, I tried my best, didn't I? And then he comes off, and then the angry man comes back on, tries to do another song in seat. My fucking CD isn't working. Right, okay. People are just sort of eating their dinner. It seems like we're like sort of in the way of their dinner. I can't really work out. It doesn't feel like a show.
And the acoustics shit as well.
Acoustics from where I'm sitting sound really bad. So then I'm like, well, because that's the problem with stand-up. If the acoustics aren't, if the mic doesn't work and no one can hear you, you are sort of fucked. Like, you can improvise as much as you want, but they can't hear you.
So I
think, right, I've got to, like, give energy and fucking, that's the only hope I've got. So he goes, right, on the second act break, I was in. So I run on and I'm like, yeah. Oh. Like, sort of dancing around, and I get nothing back, nothing. And I go, yeah, you, good evening, are you all right? Silence. Okay. I can just hear, like, food being eaten and a bit of chat.
Oh.
So I do 5 minutes of, like, my safest, most, like, mainstream, solid
family
gulp.
Friendly.
Bang, 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 and I bang it out. Nothing. Silence, nothing. Right. And then I say, right. I go, I'll be honest, I don't really know what to do with you lot. And I'm trying to keep it sort of positive, but I'm also thinking maybe I'll make some magic happen. Maybe I'll have some improvising will happen with them. Like, I don't really know what to do with you lot. I said, what I just did was what I do with an audience I'm not sure about. And it didn't even work with you. So maybe there's some other ideas. Nothing, nothing. And I go, okay, maybe I should stop addressing the fact that this isn't going well, and I'll commit to a bit, and I do a gold bit, gold, solid, nothing, nothing. And then I go, so I've only done like 7 minutes, I'm supposed to do 20, 25, and I've never in my life left before my time, except for when I'm told to, and so it's 7 minutes, and then I go, because it just feels like I'm on my own, it doesn't even feel like they're ignoring me, it's almost like they're not seeing me. So I go into the mic, can you hear me? And they all go, yes. And I go, oh, right, so you just hate me. And they go, yes. And I go, oh, right, okay, well, that explains it then. And I go, should I just fuck off? And they go, yes. And so I go, oh, well, this is... And I'm sort of like, I'm just trying to make sort of Catherine and Rich laugh because we're fucked. So I go, well, this is going to haunt me, isn't it? I said, I've come all the way to Ibiza. I was told, oh, you're going to have a lovely holiday in the sun. Just got to entertain these people for 20 minutes. And I've come out here and I get nothing from you. And they're not laughing at this, nothing. And I'm going, oh, this is... Oh, yeah, you'll all forget about this, but I'll be dreaming about this for weeks. And I go, anyway, all right, fuck you then. Good night. And I walk off. And I run back on and I go, sorry, did someone say encore? Nothing. 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 So then I have to go, right? And then they take a break. But the worst thing is, I've got nowhere to go to. Like, I'm these people's thing. So I have to go and sit back at the table amongst them. So then I sit there like, oh. I've just had this terrible kick. I can't leave. I'm trapped in Ibiza, wherever we are. And then what's awful about it?
You're staying at the place.
Yeah, we're staying in the fucking hotel where the gig was. So it was so bad that then people. So then they take a break, right? And people are and everyone is going like me and Rich are like, it's fine because it was unplayable. Like, as in, I can't feel bad about it because it was unplayable.
Yeah.
But people are going, you know what you should have done? Now you should have done like jokes that people would enjoy, like, oh, should I? Okay, yeah, that's a good, yeah. People are like giving
thanks
me advice.
Thanks for the feedback.
Cheers.
People are giving me advice and stuff. So then they take a break. But then in the break, we say to them, look, rearrange the gig can't work like this. You have to move everyone closer because there's too big a gap. So they rearrange the whole venue, bring all the tables and all the chairs closer. So then Catherine Ryan goes on. Catherine Ryan's one of, I think, the best acts in England. And she completely storms it, which is amazing and quite right too. However, the downside of that is it then makes us look really bad.
Worse,
because we had been saying, oh, it's unplayable. But then it's clearly not unplayable because she's just saying it. So then, after the gigs, Catherine comes off and they're all like, well, come on then. We said we'd take you for a drink. So then we have to go out because we've got nowhere else to go. They take us for drinks.
Back
but
to your room.
All everyone is doing is telling me how to do stand-up and like why. And people. And then one person genuinely said to me, you should have done like what Catherine did, like talk about your daughter. And talk. I was like, I don't have a daughter. I can't do what Catherine does. We're completely different people. But then, so the worst part is, so then everyone left. We go to bed, but the next day when they'd like said, oh, we'll take you on jet ski and stuff, there was so much like shame. I was like a rat hiding in this hotel. I had to kill a whole day, but I couldn't let anyone see me. I was scared to go down for breakfast. I was like, I don't want to go for breakfast with all these people. So I was like hiding in alleyways, like grabbing food where I could for the day. And the man who'd booked us for the gig, we never saw him again. We never saw him because I guess he must have been like, oh God, that was so embarrassing. I told everyone this night was going to be amazing.
Fucking, I can't believe that even, like, that can happen.
I can.
Like, I've been...
You've met Brett.
Yeah. You've seen my stuff.
When you're on holiday, even if you're pissed, like, you don't want to set out to...
I think, to be fair to them, I think it was what I'd realised once I was there. It's like this wasn't people going to comedy who wanted it. This was comedy being put
on you, yeah.
For the people. Audience, yeah. Yeah, they're there for a week. There's a week of entertainment, and suddenly their comedy is in front of them at their dinner.
Yeah,
they didn't want. They didn't necessarily come. They didn't pick us. They weren't looking for this. We were part of their package, I suppose. And it's like, clearly, we were not for them.
That's what you and Rich tell yourselves, yeah?
Yeah, but whereas Catherine can go, well, I'm just a better comedian.
You're just not very good.
Yeah. We were like, yeah, we did want good comedy. We didn't want what you brought. But that was just amazing, because I was just trapped. And I was like, where else could you go?
And jets, and the thing, I
never went
jets,
on the jet ski. Yeah,
like, have you ever been on them?
Love it. Never got to go.
So, was that your first time in Ibiza? And
That was my second, the first time I did it properly.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I was going to say, you were probably thinking, oh,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because I was thinking, oh, maybe we'll have bad gigs because everyone will be on pills and they won't be able to concentrate, and that's fine. No, not that short curve. I wish they had been on pills, mate.
I made the mistake of boshing some drugs at a comedy gig once.
How did that?
With a girlfriend.
And how did that work out?
Just
for
terrible.
You?
She was like, why did we take these drugs? I don't know.
Pills?
Yeah. At the comedy store.
Wow.
White knuckle ride, that was. White knuckle ride. It was hard. It was intense. It was rushing off my face. And I hadn't done them for years, you know. And we got some because I think Glastonbury was coming up. And we were like, let's do something impromptu. Went there and I said, oh, let's just have one of these each then, shall we? Didn't get, because I was rushing so hard, I couldn't understand the gags, then my timing was gone. Because I prefer to watch comedy sober, to be honest with you. Like, when I go to a comedy gig, I don't really want to drink a lot, because I want to, you know, properly absorb the timing and that. I didn't get any of it, mate. And my partner at the time was just like, this was a really bad idea, but whilst also, like, fucking watching her own brain. And the people around us, I reckon, I don't know if it was a fear or not, but I forgot this feeling that everyone knew that we were fidgety and, like, not really, couldn't really cope with it. So,
see, that's what I was expecting from the audience. I thought they're not going to be able to follow it, but their heckles are all going to be, I love you.
I went to a... I've got one experience of going to a comedy night that was really horrible, and I was on a stag do, and we went to one of the comedy stores in, I think it was Shoreditch. Mm. It weren't a bedroom bar. I can't think where it was, and there was four or five comedians on, and there was quite a few sort of stag do's and that in there, and we was one of them. We was quite well behaved, but there was one over the other side of the venue, and they were just the funniest guys in the party. And they were fucked.
Mm.
And, like, to the point where you just think, oh, mate, fuck off. Because, like, it's no one's having fun here apart from you three that are just gobbing off at everyone that comes on stage. And they just were slaughtering these comedians. And, like, now when you think, oh, it's ugly. And, like, and there was people going over going, like, can you stop it? And they're like, ah, fuck off. And then it got to the point where, I don't know if he's on the circuit much, but he's blind, this comedian.
Yeah, Chris McCall's in.
He come on, and they were like, literally, oh, fuck off.
No.
And, like, and I was like, and they were like, he ain't fucking blind, is he? And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, and, like, God. And they just slaughtered this poor fucker. And I was like, he's a stand-up, and, like, and he's a fair play.
And he's
like,
fucking brilliant.
He was fucking great.
Yeah.
And he gave it back to the point where, like, I think they just thought, maybe we're like piped down a bit. They like ruined like everyone's set and then literally got to the point where they're now digging out a blind guy. It was like fucking hell.
Wow.
But yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he like just steamrolled over him as well. If he could just take it and then fire it back and make him simmer down a little bit.
Mm.
I'm not very good at comebacks and stuff like that. Like that sort of playground stuff, I was terrible at.
Yeah.
I can't, you had a black belt,
so it didn't matter, did it?
I was just buying them out, mate.
Yeah.
All nine stone of me.
Yeah.
I'd hate that.
He's got a black belt.
Of course he does. He can just tell, can't he? He saw me on that trampoline.
I saw him on the trampoline.
Yeah, yeah. You mention it every single podcast.
You brought it up this time, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I've converted you.
Mm.
So my work's done now. I don't even have to mention it. You'll bring it up. Yeah.
We was talking about it yesterday, weren't we? How you have to warn people before you.
That was Brett brought that up, didn't he? Asked me.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday, weren't we?
My friend Will.
Well.
Right, so
crazy.
Right.
How many have you got left on this one?
Two.
Right.
Zwei. Should we get through them quick? How are we on?
How are we doing for time?
We're 45 minutes in.
Are we? This says 53 minutes on there. But that's okay. All right. That's fine.
All right.
Number two.
Number two. So I was in America and recently, and I was in LA and I was there for some things and I was trying to do stand-up. It's very difficult to get gigs in LA. It's very competitive. Right. I'm a completely unknown in LA, so I'd write to places. Very hard to get gigs. And I like to do gigs as much as I can, and I just wasn't doing many. And I managed to do quite a few sort of shit, like open mic gigs where you're like above a room in a Chinese restaurant. And I did one of these gigs and I made friends with some of the acts. And one of the guys said, well, keep in touch. If anything comes up, I'll let you know any gigs coming in. And he texted me and said, I'm supposed to do this gig at the Living Room. I can't do it. Do you want to replace me? I said, yeah, sure. Great. And he gave me the address.
Sorry, can I just ask you quickly? Yeah. So when you're in LA and you're, are you out there doing filmy stuff and things like that?
Yeah.
So the stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
Do you do that? Being honest, like, you do that to earn a few quid while you're out there, or do you do that because you want to test yourself in a different place with a different audience?
Yeah, I don't do it for money. Yep. I mean, I don't get paid for it in America, and I do it. I think stand-up is a bit like the gym or being fit. Like, if you don't...
Yeah.
If I don't do it, you get rusty really quick.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was...
Yeah, so I need to do it. I think I have to do it... I do it more than this, but I'd be comfortable with two or three a week.
Yeah.
To stay fit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Match fit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just for that, like, because I don't want to have a month of no gigs. Anyway, so this guy says, there's a gig at the Living Room, blah, blah, blah. So I get the address, I say yes, and I get confirmed you can come and do the gig at the Living Room. So I assume the Living Room is like a cool bar somewhere, much like the Bedroom or whatever you were saying.
Yeah. Mm.
So I go to this address, put it in the sat nav, and it seems to be a house, a weird looking house on a corner. And I think, oh, I'll ask. And I knock on the door, and a man opens the door, and he has a broken arm. As just a weird detail that it's true, he had this broken arm. And he goes, hey, you're here. And I realize that the Living Room is a living room. And I see, as he opens the door, it all becomes clear to me. And it's a bit like Misery or something. I'm like, this guy's insane, and he's booked me for his living room. And also, I sort of think, can I go? Because I see it all happening, but I also think, I can see what a sort of vulnerable, strange person he is, and I don't quite know what to do. And he says, come in, we're about to start. And I step into his living room, and basically the living room is the size of your whiffin, which is not massive.
No, it's tiny.
And there are two people, his neighbours, two people who look like they've been kidnapped, and they are sat on two chairs looking really, really awkward.
Fuck.
And he and his flatmate is smoking a bong on a beanbag over here.
That's how I chose to live your life.
And that's the audience. That's the audience. And he says, sit down, we're about to start. And I'm like, okay, what? And that, so he closes the door. So now I'm in this hostage situation.
You're on your own?
Yeah, I'm on my own. And so I sit next to the two neighbours and I'm like, hello. And they look at me. They don't really say hello. They just
like mouth help.
Yeah. They look at me like, all right. And then the man with the broken arm, he takes a mic, which he's plugged into a little amp, and he sort of stands in front of us with it. And he goes, hey, welcome to the living room. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really happening. This is it. And he goes, welcome to the living room. I'm your host. And I can't remember his name. And then he proceeds to tell a story that lasts 45 minutes about how he broke his arm. It has zero jokes. But he's sort of like, so then I went here and this happened. But the thing is, because I have, because I'm too fucking sympathetic or whatever, no one's like, it's like just awkward silence in the room, but I'm trying to go like, ha ha ha, like I'm trying to be supportive because I'm scared and confused and feel sorry for him. And because I've been supportive, he has then locked eyes with me for the whole time.
Oh, no.
So he the whole time is doing the gig straight into my eyes and I'm just going, for 45 minutes while he tells this awful story about his arm. And then he goes, okay, we're very excited. We got a special guest here to the living room. And by the way, the flatmate smoking a bomb is just getting up, walking in and out. Like, I don't think he's at the gig. He's just living there. And so he goes, welcome to the stage. Oh, is it? Okay, welcome to the stage, Brett Goldstein. And then So I sort of literally have to kind of sidle. We have to like cross each other. There's not enough room. So he then sits in my seat and I stand in front of him and his two neighbours. And he gives me the mic. And I go, oh, it's lovely. That's lovely to be here at the living room. What a, what a lot. And here is the twist. It's one of the greatest gigs I ever did. The Man with the Broken Heart is one of the best audiences I've ever had.
Was he just crazy?
He had the laugh of 100 men. I mean, really? He was killing himself. Oh. I mean, I was like, genuinely, after about 5 minutes, I was like, I am storming the living room. This is my crowd.
Oh, man.
And I did capacity the, of four.
Did 25 minutes. 30 minutes, and then I said, well, can I leave now? am I allowed out? And then I handed him back the thing, and he went, will you sign the wall? And I said, yeah, and I signed his living room.
Fingerprints.
Yeah, yeah.
The wall was actually a contract. Yeah. A sex contract. Yeah. If you look at the ceiling, there's all the clauses.
And then he was like, are you going to stay? And I was like, no, I've got another gig in the bathroom. And I was like, and I left, but yeah, it was one of the great gigs.
Oh, wow.
That's fucking it. That is,
but scary because you think
that is Partridge.
Yeah,
just a Van Allen, isn't it? Fucking hell.
Yeah. And I thought, but that's also LA. It's like here's a guy who's so desperate for gigs and to like network, I guess, that he's set one up in his bedroom.
That's
like, it was so weird.
That's zany.
Did you drink anything? Because I would have been at that point like, oh, don't accept a drink. Don't accept any food.
No,
this is going to turn into...
Hang on. I've just accepted a drink.
Well, also, when you came in, there was pictures of you all over the whiffing.
There was.
Yeah, there was.
My youngest daughter, who is a bit of a fan of Super Bob, like, has not once referred to you as Brett. She was just like, Super Bob coming over. And I was like, yeah, and I think she expected you to fly her.
I think on the trampoline.
They went, can you sort the printer out? We want to print out a picture of Super Bob for him to sign. So I was like, yeah, no worries. And then when I've gone to pick you up from the station, they'd printed out loads of pictures and just put things like Stuart loves Super Bob.
Stuart loves Super Bob more than Chris is one of them.
And blew up balloons and celebrated Brett's face to him.
This one's brilliant, just looking over my shoulder.
That's the sort of thing if that would have been up in the living room.
Yeah.
That would have looked great.
Your daughter was so sweet because she was so terrible at covering it up. When we went to pick you up, Brett.
When she gave you a thumbs up, was that what it was about?
Yeah, well, I nearly said to you in the car, like, obviously the game's up, you must know, but then I thought, don't assume
stupid.
Stuart's intelligent.
Yeah.
So I went with that.
Sure.
But she was giving me the thumbs up, and as we pulled, just before we pulled away in the car, she was at the window waving a balloon at me. I was just thinking, Layla, just don't say anything.
Oh, bless her.
Oh, she's brilliant.
Bless her.
Good jobbins. That's crazy. I mean, I wouldn't have accepted any drinks in there. I would have been,
scared?
God, this is how.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But like I said, but there is also a part of me that loves that sort of shit because I almost more than a normal gig. Cause I'm like, what in the fuck am I going to do? I kind of like the adventure of it, but I was scared when he opened the door. I immediately knew, oh shit, this is
an actual living room.
This is a situation. I don't quite know if I'm safe here.
Yeah.
But let's see what happens.
how long ago was that, mate?
That was awesome. Not long ago at all. That was...
You was in America when Pip was there, wasn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Wait. That's really scary. Like, I know there's a few things with... My friend's got a one-man act called Cunt in the Gang.
Oh, yeah, I know it. Yeah.
Oh, right. That's my best pal.
Brilliant.
And... And he's had some requests like that where people have said, like, he would auction off certain bits and pieces for the hospice that that one of his relatives died in. And this guy was buying everything. And he was like, I'll buy it as long as you drop it off.
God.
And he went round there, and I think the first time... Chrissy's phone going off as it does in every single podcast.
I turned it off.
And he turned up, and there was the wife and his kids. Now, I mean, the act's called Cunt in the Gang. you know, such seminal classics as Use My Arsehole as a Cunt and things like that.
What's the one about having a wank over his ex-girlfriend?
I'm wanking over a pornographic Polaroid of an ex-girlfriend that died. Yeah. But he's then had to perform in the front room.
To the wife and kids.
And he was like, it's not really kind of cool with the
kids. Kid-friendly, yeah.
And then he went, that's all right. And he went, can I perform a couple? And this guy then got the mic and performed all of his songs. But there's a certain rare kind of little thing we've done at Christmas. A load of us done the thing where we all sung little bits in it. And he'd done impressions of everyone, like me and anyone else that was singing on it. I think he was one of the ones where he sort of rang his sister and was like, I'm just here, just so you know.
Wow.
Like, it was quite kind of like...
Oh, my God.
I mean, obviously nothing sinister happened, but no, I mean, you just think it's quite a strange situation that, you know, where I think, as much as I think I'd embrace it, I think I'd also just be like, I think I'd be Partridge. Oh, I've got a level here. I'm quite scared now. I think I'd be like, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And literally run across the field. But
yeah, I mean... Yeah.
I'm all jealous of the fact that you've got that mindset to just think, let's just see where the adventure goes.
Yeah, but it could also get me killed.
Well, yeah, but that's...
I think that I always think, oh, well, this is a bit, I'll do it for the story. I'll do everything for the story.
Yeah.
But then, you know... He could have been a murderer.
Yeah, but that is more... I like to see how the cards lie. You know, I'm very much laissez-faire in that. I'd like to see where it goes. But even still, I sometimes get myself into scrapes and I'm like, okay.
You know what? Equally, I could say it makes me sound cool going, yeah, I'll do it for the story. But the other side of that coin is also I have an inability to say no to people. Like, I don't know that I could have gone, I'm going to leave because you've made me feel really uncomfortable. Instead, I'll be like, let's get married.
Yeah, he's like, just going to put these cable ties around your wrist. I'm like, okay. Agreeableness is a part...
You can hear more from Brett. He's going to be here every Monday now.
Yeah, it's a personality trait, and it's a study of intelligence as well. Agreeableness is one of the things that people psychologists do.
Hang on, go on.
So, like they say that, for example, also between women and men. So, women are far more agreeable than men, which makes them sometimes more suitable for some roles than others. Yeah, for sure. Men are much more disagreeable.
Hang
more
on.
Happy
so,
to
being
upset.
More agreeable means you're cleverer
No. But there is a trend to say that more agreeable people. Sometimes may be more intelligent.
So vague.
I know, but it's something I'm starting to look into now. But it's differences between men and women and different factors within personality, not
where was
just
the,
biological.
What's the fact in any of that?
Stuff like that? I don't know what the exact study is.
Oh, right, okay.
I don't know what the exact study is. There's a guy called Jordan Peterson.
Brilliant.
He's a professor of psychology, and I was watching one of his talks. And that's what...
While solving the Iran missile crisis.
Yeah, at the same time.
Yeah. All right, I will Google that name later, because I think you've just made that up.
No, Jordan Peterson. Check him out.
Okay, last one? Number one.
Let's do it.
Okay, so to be fair, I have told this story on stage before. I would like to say that, if any, because I don't like to pretend this is the first time.
Okay.
I feel guilty, but I don't think anyone will have heard it. The reason I think this story is significant because I think that live comedy and why I love it and why I think it is sacred is because, and why it's in danger nowadays, is because it should only exist in the room. And so anytime people are in the press because they said something terrible on stage or whatever, you go, it was supposed to be sacred. Like, it happened that night.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of things like Chris Rock has said when his seminal routine about black people versus N-words, he said when he was working that routine up, there were stages where it was definitely racist, but it took him a while to find the right wording for it and all of that.
Okay.
Whereas if at the middle point of him working out that routine, someone had taken a video of it, he'd be in big old trouble. And it's like, you have to, A, respect people in the room enough that they're going to get... And also, I always think when you do stuff... I've said stuff on stage that is like terrible, but you kind of know in the moment, cause you're, oh, okay, that was a terrible thing to say. And you either apologize or you whatever.
Yeah.
And then you never say it again. And that does not, it just happens. You're trying stuff out. It's supposed to be freedom of expression, I suppose, whatever. And people will police within the room. Like if you go on stage at a gig and start talking like Nazi propaganda, people are going to shout at you. Like it doesn't mean you can say whatever you want, but you also have to deal with the reaction to it.
Yeah,
of course.
But to take that out of context and put it in the news or whatever, and then everyone goes, oh, he said this terrible thing. Anyway, the reason I... So what happened to me was, I have a routine. So I did this hour-long show that was about pornography, and within it, there was a routine that I used to do in clubs. It was like a five-minute routine. I'm very proud of this routine. I'm not going to do the routine for you, but it's about the sort of feminist and the politics behind coming in a loved one's face. That's what the routine is about, right? But it's like a whole routine, yeah. And it's got lots of different like levels to it. But you have to follow it through.
Yep.
So I'm doing this gig on a Saturday night in Leicester Square, and it's rammed. And excuse me. And I'm doing 20 minutes. I get to 15 minutes, and I'm having a great gig. I'm having a lovely gig. Get to 15 minutes, and I start the coming on the face routine. I get like a couple of lines into it, and there's this hen do at the back, and one of them, a woman of about 50, goes, oi! And they go, yeah? And she goes, oi! And they go, yes? And she goes, come on her face! And they go, and they go, what's that? And she goes, come on her face! It's her hen do! And I go, I'm not sure you've understood what this evening is about. And she goes, come on, mate. And then the hen goes, yeah, come on, mate, come on my face. And the audience, like, cheer. And I go, I don't think you've paid enough for that. And then someone else, a bloke over here goes, come on, mate, come on her face. And the audience go, yes, the whole audience have, like, turned on this.
I like the fact they're all on board.
Yeah.
It could happen.
And I go, are you telling me that my really well-researched, very clever, thoughtful routine about ejaculating on a woman's face, you do not want to hear the end of it, instead you would rather I come on that woman's face, and the whole audience go, yay! And I go, well, that backfired. And then I go, okay, well, let's think this through for a second. Let's think this through. You genuinely would like, as an audience, you would like me to hang up the mic, walk through the crowd, have to walk through the crowd, have to go over there, have to pull down my trousers, have to somehow get an erection while 300 people are chanting, and then I've got to bring myself to fruition onto this woman's face because it's her hen do, and they all go, yay! And then the hen goes, yeah, come on! And then a bloke over here goes, mate, you are wasting our time, come on her face!
My favourite!
And so eventually, like, my time finishes, and I go, well, this has been amazing, hasn't it? And I get the mic stand up, and I go, I put the mic in, and I go, well, the good news is I realise I definitely have to walk past that hen do on my way out of this gig. So thanks very much. You've been a wonderful audience. I've got to go and come on that woman's face now. Good night. And I leave the stage. And I really thought about it, and I thought, if you'd filmed that, just the last bit of me,
yeah,
and you just took that clip out of context, yeah. Like, I don't look like the sort of comedian I am. What you would just see is a man going, I've got to go and come on that bird's face now. Yeah, good night. That's my act. And, like, out of the context, it looks
like
dapper laughs. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a different thing. Which is why I have sympathy for Dapper Laughs, because I think everything he did was take it, you know.
Yeah.
The clips of him live, it's like, you weren't there in the, not that yeah. I, anyway, I mean, I'm leaving that subject alone, but you know what I mean?
So do you think that do you think, like, stand-up's kind of getting tougher and harder to get crowds to? And, I mean, because on the kind of Comedy Store level and things like that, because obviously what we've also seen in the last sort of 10 years is comedians selling out stadiums, or arenas, whatever you want to call it, you know, like your Russell Brand and Pete Kay, Lee Evans, all doing like the O2 for whatever many
nights. Well, then what, Kevin
like
Hart over in the States, the one he sold out was just nuts.
Like, but
I don't think comedy should happen in arenas.
Yeah,
there, I said it.
Yeah, no,
I don't, the ones I've seen, I haven't laughed as much at.
No, because it's not live, it suddenly becomes it's not a live intimate. It's about, I think, what people forget or misunderstand is that comedy is a two-way street, genuinely, and like, as an audience, you're part of it, you actually are, and you have to do work. It's not, I think sometimes people get, why one of the reasons I think people get annoyed at comedy is because they think, why are you making me, like, they sort of think it's like going to the cinema, they can just sit back and it's just going to happen, but they have to engage with it. Sometimes I want to always tell an audience, I always want to go, if you really get into this, if you make an effort and if you really go for it and laugh big, you're going to see the best acts you've ever seen because then everyone can surf. Like, if you give energy to the stage, then that comedian can improvise, can fucking go off. They will do a much better show for you.
Yeah.
Whereas if your attitude is, do your best show for me and I'll see if I laugh.
Make me laugh. You're making
it so much harder. It's like, I genuinely think that's why they say it's like surfing, because if you have no wave, it's very hard to get anything going, no matter how good a surfer you are. But if the audience gives you a wave, then you'll be like, hey, fucking, you know.
It does, but it boosts the confidence.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Obviously, just as we've said, like, you know, being in bands and stuff like that, it's exactly the same. You know, you don't want to go and see, I don't know, fucking U2 at the O2. You want to see U2 in a 500 capacity venue. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you want that intimacy, and that's why you get the likes of your Foo Fighters going and playing tiny little gigs in places, because it's
a better gig.
You can see people's eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a roar of a crowd and lights. You know, you actually kind of see what you're doing.
I've rarely been on stage, and when we went and gave that award the other week, that was strange, because we got up there and you can't really see. I really couldn't see a lot, and people say that, but until you get up there and it's all the lights were in your face. Yeah. So it's not like in a comedy room, is it, when there's not that many people and you can pick up that vibe.
It was all right.
Yeah, that all went, I felt like a rabbit in the headlights.
Did you do jokes?
I thought of a few, actually, the day before. They were actually quite funny, if I don't mind saying myself. But when we got there, none of them really, when they told us how the awards were getting presented and that, none of it really made sense to do. And I didn't want to just try and force it out if the setup wasn't right, if you know what I mean. So we changed it, didn't we?
We thought that the idea of the fact that we've been doing a podcast for like 2 months and we're now giving an award out to all these ones that are really proper and stuff. Let's just use this as an opportunity to fuck around as much as we can and shit or bust, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously we had to be mindful that we were Pip's guests and Pip had kind of... And so, exactly, given us the foot up into doing it. We ummed and ahed about lots of little things, didn't we? But, lots of kind of walking straight on and accepting the award and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
that was it, yeah.
We played up a bit, didn't we?
Well, because you come up with a good one and you said, well, why don't we backstage? Because the mics will be on as we walk on. But while we're backstage, we'll start talking into the mic before we get on stage.
Yeah.
And say, I'm scared. Just hold my hand. Just hold my hand. We'll get through this.
Yeah.
But I'd already sussed by the point we started saying that no one could hear. So we just walked out holding hands. And I thought, as that platform dawned on me, I was like, you've just got to make that. Because no one knows us.
Yeah.
So how do they not know that we're not a couple?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just go out there and act like a couple a bit. So it was good though.
Yeah, it was really good fun.
But going back to that, I think comedy, When I've gone to Staines, I've been really pumped up to see someone and I've seen them at a larger venue. I'm kind of like, oh, it wasn't quite as good as when I saw him in a smaller room.
Because I do think any time I've seen comedy in an arena, it's like, I could be watching the DVD, it's the same. I'm watching a big screen,
but
I'm not connected to it.
The same with sport.
Yeah.
Like, I went and watched Cole Frostbox at the O2 and was sat up in the gods watching it on the screen. And I just thought, I might as well just watch it at home.
And it's like, not like you feel part of the atmosphere when you're that far away. You're just like,
Yeah, I don't know, mate. I get a lot of front row these days for all the big fights. So I don't know really what that's.
Didn't get invited.
That's all. What that's like. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, should we take a
let's have a little pee break.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a pretty spectacular top five. Brett Goldstein.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. And
And you'll be back shortly.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
With part two.
Every Monday.
yes, I'm agreeable and clever.
I'm just going to grab the cable ties.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, well, thanks, Brett. And thank you. We'll see you shortly.
Okay.
Bye.
Welcome back.
Oh, I thought he was going to go for a welcome back. That's how you know that there's very little planning and even communication between the pair of us.
You always want to try and do something well thought out, and I generally go, just fucking press record.
You do. You say that, and I'm sat here going, no, I'm trying to think of something horrible.
Because I'm a dynamic maverick.
I'm trying to think of something horrible to say about Brett.
Well, you honestly did. Like, you was going, let me just try and think of something horrible to say about Brett. And you've actually gone and looked at emails from Brett to see if there's anything you can be horrible about.
I'm trying to pull him apart.
And you can't actually find anything, can you?
Can't get any spot. There's no flies on him.
Exactly, mate. Exactly,
mate.
Well, look, I know you would have enjoyed that because it was fucking great.
Yeah.
And, we're going to leave it there.
Could Brett be, like, just... He could just be an honorary guest whenever he's got nothing else on.
Yeah.
I'd always have Brett down.
Exactly.
He was wicked. He's a funny dude as well. Yeah. And those stories are quite insane. Did you... The come-on-a-face hen party was quite insane.
Yes. Yep. That was quite strange.
I guess that's my only criticism.
Yeah.
Is he never came on a face, did he?
No, that's
he
fair enough.
He bottled it.
Yeah. Chicken shit. Yeah, I did remember getting in that night and saying to my missus, he was really nice, Brett. I said he even commented that our house was nice and such, and said that, you know, wow, you've got a hot tub. And Carol said, he should have got in it. And I was like, what?
Oh.
And she went, maybe you could get that other guy, Ed Skrine, to come down and maybe we could both get in it. And I just thought, hang on a minute, what about if me and Chris got in it?
Jesus. Well, what? This is all getting confused. I'm getting in the hot tub with you and your wife.
No, not with her. I mean, that if me and you got in a hot tub... It's
too sexy for anyone.
That's 6 o'clock.
It's too sexy. Although I did see Carol giving Brett the look.
What was quite weird was he did go in the house where she was and then he come back out with two bananas.
Oh, Bretty, two bananas.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure did.
Okay. Well, look, thanks loads for listening. We're going to bang on at the beginning of part two about how much we appreciate your support and such. Should we leave it there?
Yeah.
We talk too much, don't we?
Take care of them.
Okay, bye-bye.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.